Galaxy, the program you need for trying information and events that may affect the lives of all people, even you. This evening, ladies and gentlemen, we are privileged to hear a discourse on the outstanding mystery of the 20th century. The subject is interplanetary spacecraft. The being who brings this enlightening information to you by means of tensor beam is Koala, the one who so clearly described the Great Pyramid on the last broadcast. Again, we are honored to present to you Koala.
Greetings in the light of our radiant one. I am Koala. It has been observed that your people have many questions regarding those of our craft seen within your atmosphere and those that it has been rumored exist. Let me mention, my brothers, that in the immediate vicinity of your planet, there are at the moment approximately 10 million of our spacecraft. Those available in this solar system would raise this figure significantly. In the galaxy, the figure would approach close to 200 million. The question must arise in your minds as to the purposes involving so many craft, and this I will attempt to elaborate upon. We of the Confederation utilize various forms of spacecraft for many different missions and employments. We have types devoted entirely to survey and patrol work. We have those which are definitely concerned with construction, those for scientific purposes, and those for the transport of personnel and the housing of communications equipment. We have many millions of craft employed exclusively for the people who reside on various planets to carry on their daily activities. And these craft are maintained by the Confederation. The individuals concerned neither own them nor perform any type of, how you would say, maintenance upon them. They are placed at the individual's disposal from the times of birth until they expire. They are theirs to do with as they wish. Let us examine first that type of craft so prevalent in your illustration. This is the craft shown having three protuberances emerging from the bottom. These craft, my brothers, are primarily intended for planetary survey work and very light gathering of supplies and transport of small groups of persons. They are not capable of complete interplanetary flight upon their own. For the crossing of any planet's magnetic field, they are transported within a larger vehicle, such as a mothership. They can function only within a planetary body's own magnetic field. For this purpose, they serve admirably. Now let us examine those which were responsible for the furor we have inspired of recent. Those which your Kenneth Arnold discovered while flying his craft in the vicinity, known to you as Mount Rainier, Washington. These, the crescent-shaped craft, have a definite mission. Their first and primary mission is the charting of those areas known as magnetic anomalies any fault zones upon your planet and other planets. They are actually mapping craft of a very special nature. Now let us continue and examine that which is known as the triangular-shaped craft as seen in the area known as your Rocky Mountain. These craft, my brothers, belong to the Confederation and are extremely interesting. Their main purpose is to monitor the thought patterns and reactions of the people of any planet they are sent to survey. I now discuss that ship known as Spheroid. This type of craft is employed primarily from that known as a mothership and is used for scientific study or the gathering of specimens. They handle a great deal of cargo. They are operated by remote control from a mothership. These crafts can also be used for the transport of individuals or small groups. Let us move on and examine still another type. The long cylindrical shaped craft commonly called by your people the mothership. The length of such a ship employed by our Confederation is over 10 miles as figured by your terminology. They are capable of housing approximately 300 to 500 of the first type craft we examined. They carry a crew of from anywhere from 1,500 to 2,000 occupants. They can remain in space, removed from any planetary system, for a period of 10 of your years, and be entirely self-sufficient. They are capable of interplanetary travel on a limited basis, and can reach some of the closer star systems to your solar system. We refer to these craft as our primary transportation. They are equipped to travel at speeds in excess of light. However, whenever these craft are operated within several parsecs of any planetary body, their speed is reduced for obvious reasons. Let us examine one type of craft capable of covering interstellar distances. This type of craft is very similar to that first described, except that it has a perfectly flat surface of planet's bottom. This type of craft is used by a very special core of our people, engaged upon missions of great importance. These craft are under the direct control of a local solar tribunal. Their primary purpose is that of scientific nature. They carry controls and types of instrumentation unusual aboard even most of our craft. There have also been craft witnessed in your atmosphere that have often been mistaken for meteors. The color is that of your color, green. These, my brothers, are ships with only one purpose: that of neutralizing dangerous amounts of radioactivity in your atmosphere. They travel about your planet, absorbing and completely neutralizing radioactivity. Upon completion of their mission, they are diffused into atomic size and are, as you would say, expendable. Let me bring to your attention at this time two types of craft seen only once in your planet's history. The first type to be mentioned is that known to your people as a five-pointed geometrical design, called a star. As you all know, this configuration bears no resemblance to any heavenly object, and yet its symbology to your people has been extremely significant. On one occasion, its purpose in lighting your evening sky led to the discovery of a newborn babe cradled in a manger, the effects of which have been felt through many ages upon your planet's surface. Needless to say, these craft are witnessed only on extremely special occasions. This perhaps would explain a rather intriguing mystery present to many of your people, and will no doubt provoke thoughts similar to those we wish to have provoked. Now let us examine the other. This type of craft, my brothers, is along the geometrical form you know of as a square. It is a cubular-shaped craft of a size approximately 1,500 miles in length and breadth and depth, and are called the Cities of Shan. This craft and six more once touched upon the surface of your planet for evacuation purposes. They are what you would call miniature worlds within themselves, complete civilizations intact. Each of these craft or cities can provide for and satisfy the demands of approximately 10,000 individuals, and is used as a transport for carrying these individuals to other areas of space for definite reasons. This type of craft has been recorded in your history. It is described in interesting detail in one of your holy writings. The description is quite adequate. I believe, my brothers, that we have touched upon this subject with enough detail at present to satisfy many questions concerning our type of craft. To carry it further would perhaps prove interesting to some, but for the majority whom this little talk has been presented for, I believe I will heed the advice of one upon your planet who once quoted that a topic to be presented and enjoyed should be brief. It has been my privilege to speak. Adonai, my brothers. I am Kwala.
Thank you, Kwala. Your discussion on this mysterious subject answered many questions. This address was transmitted by Tensor Beam. The program unique, portraying information and events that may affect the lives of all people, even you. Ladies and gentlemen, we are indeed privileged to speak with you again. Galaxy now presents the topic, Methods of Interplanetary and Spaceship Communication. The many methods of communication discussed at this time make one appreciate the advanced technology of our space friends. On this occasion, we have an unusual experience for you, our audience. This presentation takes the form of questions and answers, wherein several different persons have the opportunity to present questions to a friend from another planet. Ladies and gentlemen, I am honored to present to you, the listening audience, the voice of Monka, an inhabitant of the planet Mars.
Greetings, people of Earth. I am Monka. It is indeed my privilege to address all of you at this time. I have consented to several questions presented by your people. You may proceed.
Monka, many people have inquired about the ways you people have found to communicate with the people of Earth. Do you care to enumerate the ways, or some of the ways in which this is done?
Regarding the various methods we have of communicating with your peoples, we face a number of unique problems. Let us say that the determining factor, first of all, in any communication, is the method of reception employed. In reception, we have the methods of impressing upon the minds of various individuals through both mechanical and what your people would call electronic means by the employment of certain fields of force that may be beamed, or shall we say, aimed in various directions to cover either large or small areas. By using these beams, we may transmit data or information. This information may be converted through the type of receiver used. Let us say, in the case of one who is adept in that which is known to your peoples as impressed writing, that the mind of the individual so employed as a receiver is conditioned by a choice or by the impression of an external field. The mind then unconsciously directs and controls the necessary muscular reactions to form the style of penmanship and also the characters. To form the words in the language used. In this manner, a complete communication may be delivered while the individual is used as such a receiver. In the next instance, where the reception known as radio is employed, the communication may be delivered either directly from one of our large communication centers on the planet or through the relaying facilities of one of our spacecraft, which in turn is broadcast upon waves electromagnetic in nature. These waves are then received by your ordinary means of radio communication. We can beam this type of reception to either a large area, or it may be confined to very narrow limits. Another type of communication involves that known as the impressing of information upon what your people refer to as a beam of light. In this instance, there are certain types of material that display qualities that are sensitive to the light vibration known as infrared. A special receiver, already known by your people, is capable of receiving pulsations of infrared light and converting them into audible sounds. It may be scoffed at by some, but infrared rays of light are capable of spanning much greater distances than any form of communication known upon your planet. We have, for a great period of time, used this as one method in a permanent network of intergalactic communications. Perhaps one of the most interesting methods of communication used by us is that known in our terminology as a tensor beam. In this instance, a cone-shaped field of magnetic radiation of a wavelength unknown to your present technology is projected by either a craft in your immediate vicinity or directly from one of our larger communication centers. This, which is called the tensor beam, consists of three types of magnetic phenomena occurring simultaneously. Let us call them, for the sake of illustration, a core surrounded by two concentric tubular layers of magnetic substance. The central core is a type of magnetic radiation 2 inches in diameter, which, when projected, acts on the brain of the receiving person. The inner tubular layer controls the immediate physical environment of the receiving person and extends exactly 4 inches beyond the area of the body of the person engaged and reception. The outer tubular layer contains what we call the return circuit. This picks up the emanations from the minds of the individuals present about the receiving person. This layer serves as a carrier for returning their thoughts to our monitors.
Monica, how are you able to express yourself in so many different languages?
For your further information, we have at our disposal a device which does not rely upon vocal translation of our language into yours, although it can be so employed. The method used consists of a suitable field of induction which picks up our thoughts directly. It then converts them into impulses suitable for transmission by tensor beam, which in turn are interpreted and acted upon by the mind of the receiving person. This device, which we call the Ediphone, is the machine used to translate our thoughts into impulses suitable for transmission. The translation into your language, in the case of tensor beam, is accomplished through the mind of the receiver. I might mention that the effects of tensor beam communication upon an individual result in several interesting factors. One factor in our communications is the sometimes limiting effect imposed by the scope of the receiving person's vocabulary. However, often entirely new concepts are implanted upon the mind of the receiving person. This is dependent on the degree to which the receiver is in tune with the transmitting station. A mechanical vocalator is used where radio or light beam is the communication method employed. Let us explain that the mechanical vocalator is a device which converts thoughts into oral expression.
Monica, have your people on any occasion used the medium of a telephone for communication purposes?
In answer to your question, this medium of communication can be utilized upon occasions. However, we do not favor this method. When it is so employed, the mechanics needed could result either in a failure of the circuits involved in the communication, or in some instances, replacement of your equipment.
Thank you, Monica. This enlightening communication was both refreshing and informative.
Ladies and gentlemen, you have just heard a recorded communication with Monica of the planet Mars. The questions were prepared by the staff of Galaxy for submission to Monica, our space friend. The questions and answers transmitted and received on this program were exchanged by TensorBeam. This address was transmitted by TensorBeam. Galaxy, the program unique, portraying information and events that may affect the lives of all people, even you. It is again our privilege, ladies and gentlemen, to present Galaxy. On this occasion, we find ourselves facing a most interesting situation. We have been able to arrange an interview and verbal tour through one of the largest communication control centers in our solar system. We are privileged to have a brother from space who is known by the title of Soul Tech to guide us upon our verbal tour as well as answer many of our questions. Explanations of how communications are handled upon a level far beyond our understanding will be shown to us. Good evening, Soul Tech. We are indeed honored by having you conduct us
on this visit.
Greetings, people of Earth. It is my privilege to be with you this your evening for the little excursion to our communications center upon the planet Mars. I am afraid this must be accomplished in your imaginations for the moment. But can you visualize our entering a large dome structure? This structure covers an area approximately 1 mile square by your measurements. It stands approximately 275 feet tall. We believe, on entering the structure, that you will first be amazed and then confounded by the sight which your eyes behold, and the fact that tier upon tier of communications equipment is present. Brothers, I am sure there are many questions in your minds at this point.
Soltec, will you kindly explain the use of this equipment?
At this level, my good brother of Earth, we have communications which link all of the inhabited planets of our solar system. Here we find dispatch centers capable of contacting all manner of craft employed by our peoples in all their regular duties and missions. Upon the second tier we view, we find the apparatus necessary to conduct communications of galactic nature. These communications do not operate over the mechanisms presently thought of and envisioned by your people. Had you been afforded a view of the top of this structure, you would have noticed large cube-shaped structures with a type of cross-hatch pattern. This structure emits a beam of almost invisible light. The very nature of this light enables us to communicate at speeds once the beam has left a planetary environment to what is commonly termed in your language the speed of light.
Soltec, how long have your people been in contact with the planet Earth?
During the last 7,000 of your years, survey craft from the galaxy have visited your planet at regular intervals. Our increased surveillance of your people occurred when our instruments first recorded and detected the evidence that you had finally arrived at an atomic-based culture. At that time, several meetings were held by our people to discuss the potentialities involved in an early contact with your people. Our people, in forms which resemble yours very closely, were landed by our craft upon your planet. They were given a period of 1 of your years to mingle with your races. They were then to report back on the cultural and evolutionary states found. At the end of this period, these, our people, were removed from your planet. The conclusion arrived at was that the people upon your planet were not yet ready.
Soltec, from your viewpoint, what has transpired in, let us say, the last 10 years?
In your year 1947, Our craft in increasing numbers were sighted more often by your people. It was suggested to all of our people that excursions to the planet Earth were to be confined to flights of scientific or cultural objectives. Prior to this, great numbers of our people had paid your planet a visit and examined it for themselves. Our survey craft recorded innumerable impressions, received on frequencies known by our people to be emitted from the human mind. The thought was a belief in our presence. Immediately, councils were called, and this new and startling information was again digested. And the decision arrived at was to permit certain of our craft to contact large segments of your people. Individuals from all walks of life were to be approached and questioned. If the occasion warranted, they were to be admitted aboard our craft, some even taken upon short excursions. This procedure was followed for the next 5 of your years. The laws administered by various bodies of our people have stated that we shall be privileged to communicate with your people as often as desired. As the occasions arise, your people will be continually contacted by our survey craft. In the last 7 of your years, this latest directive has been followed. When races of people start to consider the rights and the individual freedoms of first their nation, then their racial groups, and finally and lastly, the inviolable right of the individual to live life as it has been created, these people are then ready to receive our presence. To do so ahead of this scheduled would bring pain, not only to yourselves, but to us also. Pain not physical, rather mental. Because truth, my brothers, is often painful.
Soltec, does this architecture portray some of your philosophical concepts?
In examining the foyer of this communication center upon the planet Mars, you, my brother, have merely witnessed one of the outstanding accomplishments of this world. In our conversation, you have noticed that I disposed of the communication aspect rather quickly. You will also notice that even your questions were guided into new channels of thought. It is our purpose to see if the people upon your planet, once their initial curiosity is satiated, will continue to think. Unfortunately, we have seen great masses of your people become enslaved by those who would do their thinking for them. It is painful for us to witness great and proud nations and people fall upon their knees before the presence of what is termed, in your language, a sovereign power. The greatest triumph of man is his dignity. The dignity of the individual will be truly appreciated when men upon your surface will acknowledge none as their superior. When they will realize that all forms of life and creation are truly equal, only upon different levels. Also that no particular level is more commensurate with wisdom and intelligence than another.
Thank you, Soltec. This discussion, I'm sure, will be long remembered.
I have been greatly appreciative of having been able to escort you upon our little trip. We shall return now to your planet, the Earth, rotating slowly upon its axis, wrapped in an eternal destiny. Upon our arrival, what do we find? We look about, and we notice that many ears that were deaf at the beginning of this little talk are now listening quite intently. Stop and analyze the reason. You are thinking now. What your thoughts and conclusions finally arrived at are of little or no consequence. My interest has primarily been in seeing to it that you were given an opportunity to exercise your minds. To you, the people of Earth, lift your heads and turn your eyes towards your heavens. Now I will depart. I am known as Soltec. Adonai Basu Barakas.
Information which may affect the lives of all people, even you. The program unique, portraying information and events that may affect the lives of all people, even you. Privilege indeed to relay to you, our listening audience, this talk transmitted by TensorBeam. The honorable space being who will address you at this time is the head of government on the planet Mars. He also serves as the Martian delegate to the Solar Tribunal, which convenes on the planet Saturn. Thank you. are honored to present our esteemed friend, Monka.
Greetings, people of Earth. I am Monka. It is my great privilege at this time to address you who would hear my words. The topic I would suggest this your evening is one I believe you will find most interesting. It deals with the planet Earth and its relationship to its neighbors, solar and galactic. In your past, it has been recorded that there have been many instances in which what you call unidentified flying objects have appeared in your skies. It is interesting to note, people of Earth, that we have been present, viewing and observing your planet's evolutionary progress since the time that intelligent life first appeared on your surface. As you entered what you call your atomic age, it became necessary for us to increase the frequency of our surveillance of your planet. I can assure you that we have viewed your evolution through many ages. We immediately were informed by our monitor craft stationed within your planet's atmosphere when your atomic experiments were initiated in your year, 1945. Upon hearing our monitor's broadcast, our survey craft immediately approached your planet to make a new estimate of the potential of your technological development. Since that year, numerous sightings of our craft have been made in your atmosphere. One of our interests lies entirely with your technological development in the field of nuclear physics. Nuclear detonations upon your planet's surface and in its atmosphere have effects recordable upon our planet elsewhere in the solar system. Whether you choose to experiment with weapons of an atomic nature is of little concern, with one exception. We would be forced to nullify your atomic devices if the frequency of your atomic explosions increased to the point where the inherent stability of your planet is threatened. Such ability, I assure you, exists. We are concerned about the possible effects that this could bring about in the relationship of other planets near to you in space. Atomic power, rudimentary as it is in its infant stages, that you have discovered, is like thimbles of sand compared to your mightiest mountains. as yet your science does not know the true meaning of the word power. The planet Earth occupies a unique position in the solar system of Sol. Its absence would be greatly missed. Should the annihilation of your entire planet be brought about by thoughtless and unknowing experiments, it is my sad duty to inform you, people of Earth, that in your past there existed between the orbit of Mars and Jupiter a planet very similar to your own. This planet was destroyed by a nuclear blast brought about accidentally because of a slight miscalculation on the part of a group engaged in what is termed scientific endeavor. A mistake. One such as any is capable of making. But in this instance, one was all that was called for. The result is what you call the asteroid belt. Your primary attempts to enter the early fringes of space, namely in attempting to contact the surface of your own satellite, your moon, I can assure you, will be successful. However, should you attempt to progress or send what you term a reconnaissance rocket in the direction of any other planet in this solar system, such a vehicle will not return. Your science is already aware of sonic barriers, heat barriers, and now the ionized barrier about your planet. They have yet to learn of the magnetic barrier existing at the limits of your Earth's magnetic field. This barrier will explain the disappearance of your craft. Naturally, since your moon is located within your own planet's magnetic field, you will have no difficulty reaching that body. Attempt travel beyond the moon and your magnetic barrier, and I will predict the non-return of any craft. If you doubt my words, people of Earth, it is very, very simple for you to find out. Within the next 6 of your month, attempts will be made to reach your closest neighbors in space. Remember my words upon hearing the results of these trials. It is time, people of Earth, that truth becomes a reality to your peoples. You have had countless years to evolve, socially, culturally, and technically. You do not have the same amount of time, I'm afraid, to undo all of the mistakes made in your past. It will be a credit to those of your nations and peoples who come to the realization that there is no substitute for truth and honesty. You will not, I am afraid, be given an alternative. Truth and honesty within the next 5 of your years
will become uppermost in the minds of all of your people. For such is not the case. It is readily apparent that there will be none of what is termed humanity left in existence upon the face of the planet Earth. Again, should my words be doubted, you have not long to wait. People of Earth, I, Monka, have delivered this address to you in the hopes that there will be some who hear my words, who will heed them, so that one of the most beautiful planets in this solar system, and one whose civilizations and evolutions, cultured through centuries of time, would not be lost in the near future. Given the opportunity, I will speak again and attempt to answer a series of questions submitted by your people. It is my intent and purpose, people of Earth, to see what awaits your immediate actions in the future. Again, I assure you, we of the Universal Confederation will not interfere. I am Monka, Adonai Vasu Baragas.
Heard a recorded communication with Monka of the planet Mars. This address was transmitted by Tensor Beam. Galaxy, the program you need, portraying information and events that may affect the lives of all people, even you. Presents a talk that is both fascinating and yet serious. This discourse, like all that have been given on this series of broadcasts, has one main objective. It is to provoke thought. Our esteemed space friend Monka discusses the planet known throughout our solar system as the Green Emerald, the planet of mystery. Again privileged to present one who has become very dear to us, our Martian friend, Monka.
Greetings in the light of our radiant one. I
Amonka. In speaking at this time, my brothers and sisters, I would speak with you about one of the little-known aspects of a certain planet. In times far removed from this one's present, great forces and energies from sources which, in your terminology, could be considered divine, were exercised upon this mass of substance. Great stirrings were felt, mighty forces were unleashed, and wave upon wave of awakening consciousness radiation poured forth from the very ether itself. And this one knew identity and consciousness. Its position, like many sister planets throughout the universe, was to then evolve through eons of time to a time when its evolution passed beyond the need of its physical existence. For by this time, its purpose would have been served. This planet, my brothers, was located in a typical solar system. Races from various other sectors of space visited this one, and human civilization was enacted. Through eons of time, man gained ever an awareness. He experienced all manner of this thing called life. He gained, through ages of total ignorance, shall we say, into more enlightened ages. He discovered the principles of some of the universe's great laws. Through the sense perceptions available, he began to observe, to correlate data, to make assumptions. These findings precipitated him into an age of great learning and great enlightenment. But like most forms of consciousness newly realizing the potentials of great forces, poorly understood and at his disposal, a blunder occurred, and man upon this one was cast back or reduced to again a more primitive state, not totally lost in awareness, but shall we say with a portion of his memory removed. These ones, again, started building for their futures with a great and mighty ideal still implanted in the innermost core of their being. Again, progression occurred, and this form of man, now the wiser through the gaining of much experience, treaded upon the path and again sought the ascending steeps of loftier heights. There passed ages of gradual awareness and awakening. Man again sought for and obtained the essences of that known as the divine. This time, however, his progress was more carefully planned. Instead of evolving at utmost speed, his footsteps faltered sometimes along the path. But nonetheless, his strains were never too far removed from the goal he had envisioned as his future. At a specified time, a great teacher was sent to these ones to again precipitate them into an awakening experience. This one, having left his influence and his teachings, left your planet in a way never to be forgotten. And since this time, progression has occurred at an ever-accelerating pace. Now, as this one evolved, again the forms of science, technology, and the evolvement of things considered spiritual took place.
This time, these ones discovered new forms of energy. They started delving into the very secrets of that called matter. Soon, they learned the various ways of dissembling matter itself. Unfortunately, these powers were not always used towards constructive ends. For even amongst these ones, there were those. There were those beings from other worlds who quietly stepped into this planet's environment, who sought after positions. For should evolution and progression again attempt a direction towards that which could be considered detrimental, these ones could exercise the great knowledge, the great teachings, the great awakenings. Now we shall examine for a moment this one's two alternatives. Let us look first upon a progression considered correct. Let us look at a planet whose cultures and sciences, whose spiritual achievements reached forwards and upwards, whose races knew peace and harmony, whose people trod the forests and hills, and whoever enjoyed the calm serenity of pale azure skies lined with fleecy white clouds, who listened to the cries of the birds, who enjoyed the delicate fabric of a forest carpet, whose eyes surveyed mighty mountain chains, whose eyes observed rolling waves of grain, whose eyes observed the mighty rollings and swells of oceans wide. This, my brothers, is one probability. One whose very probability could advance mankind in a short period to the learning of such truths that powers not unlike those of the gods would be theirs. These ones would spiral not only outwards through their neighboring systems to other stellar constellations, but would even discover the secrets of their own planet's internal core and learn perhaps the most startling of all information. This is the probability leading men in footsteps most desired. Then, my brothers, there is another probability existent, one where those forces at man's disposal would be turned towards the creation of havoc and destruction, where grief and poverty, misery and anguish would be the rewards cast upon humanity. A humanity which in itself would undergo these experiences for not having faced the realities ever present about them, whose eyes, instead of accepting that which is true, would be glazed and dulled, whose hearts and minds, having been conditioned, would accept mere statements or words as fact, whose very thoughts of reality were colored by the thoughts of those who told them what to think. Could not your hearts go out to people so blinded and enslaved, so comfortable in their wheels and shells of ignorance, that they would not have the insight to look about them? It would be a great pity. My brothers and sisters, in our many discourses with your peoples, meanings have been brought forth to your awareness for your consideration. They have one purpose only: to cause men upon your planet to think, to let them see, perhaps, a glimmer of that elusive thing known as truth. If on any occasion we have accomplished this, we have accomplished a mighty deed,
For in all my references, my brothers and sisters, I've been speaking to a planet known through many, many stellar systems. And as I believe most of you are aware, one known as Earth. Throughout all of the teachings available to your peoples, references have been made to great gods, of great beings, perhaps people of Earth. You are about to witness this for yourselves. I, Monka, have spoken. May the light of our Radiant One be with you, and may I most humbly plead you awaken before it is again too late. Adonai, my brothers, may our Great One's radiance be with you.
Sincere thanks, Monka, for your noble effort to arouse in us a true appreciation of the planet on which we reside.